Chapter 4, Rebirth. Wow, and I had several names. My choices whittled down to Alice, Bianca, Heather and Leah. I chose Leah because of the character names Leah Brahms on that one episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation. Actually, it was two episodes. I had a biker gang beard, great big bushy beard. My dad said it looked like a jihadi terrorist. I also tucked my penis regularly, compressing it into my testicles inside me, and walked around in wearing tight layers of tight pants. I shaved my body regularly, even in my teens, and now it made sense. It also made sense now how I had always imagined myself with a vagina when thinking about sex. I regularly fantasized about one of my male friends when I was a teenager, but I put it out of my mind each time. You know, being gay was not exactly allowed in 2005. I'd spent weeks at that point after I realized I was trans in what felt like psychosis. I tried so hard to disprove what had now become abundantly and absurdly clear. I failed every time, prompting both euphoria and terror on my part. I can only describe it as having been, I was like just really lightheaded for weeks. Hyper aware of everything around me, I remained in perfect fog, aware of it for the first time. I felt truly self-aware for the first time in my life, but it was cold comfort. Everything felt hostile at that point, a lie, like waking up from the Matrix. The world around me now seemed ugly and cruel. I was incredibly lonely, free for the first time in my life, emotionally free, but now I had to figure out what that actually meant. How I would live, knowing what I knew. What the fuck was I going to do now, you know? A new fog enveloped me that day. I came out to some friends that had worked with me on Libra Boots, and one or two people from the FSF staff. They kept it private. March 2016 arrived, and my fog reached Boston. A lot of trans people went to the FSF conferences because there were a lot of trans people in the free software world, much more than in wider society, and I now noticed all of them. My trans friend from the FSF greeted me in her office as I arrived, me sitting in guy mode. Her girlfriend entered the room and asked, "How's new girl doing?" "Fine," I replied, in my t-shirt and jeans. What followed was a one-hour conversation with her, as I'd already met her at the FSF 30 conference. We already knew each other. I very much enjoyed talking about myself unencumbered for the first time in my life. I had her ear for the full hour, and we talked a lot after that. I probably even smiled. She told me once later that it was so nice to see me smile, although I'd usually only do it involuntarily while drunk. There were a lot of trans people at the Libra Planet conference, and you know they'd all get to know who I really was. I was still dressed in men's clothing. I was uncomfortable coming out publicly, even amongst friends, but they called me Leah. Although I deeply regret this now, I would tell them all of my deepest, darkest desires and about myself as a person. I regret it, because they were basically all judging me. That's what it felt like anyway. Like, even if they were friendly, I resent now that I confided in them so much. I didn't even need to be there. I did enjoy their company, and, you know, we ate out a lot. I also did tell them that I don't feel emotions, a fact that some of them picks up on at the time. I remember one time one of them saying something, or not saying it, rather. I was mumbling to myself once in a room when I thought no one was around. And one of them entered the room that I was in. I felt her presence as I switched back instantly. She seemed to know something, but she said nothing. She was giving me right funny looks. It's really weird. I don't know what was what. I'm sure they didn't catch it all then, because, you know, gender dysphoria and also the fact that half of the people there were autistic, you know, just gave me perfect cover. And dissociation was normal as well, especially for someone like me. But this was anything but dissociation. You know, I was fully aware. I met a friend's older brother years earlier in my teens, who I thought was really cool. He was autistic, and I emulated some of his traits. But I don't think I'm actually that autistic myself. I mimic people. The fact that I'm into computers as well, you know, just makes it a more plausible claim. Couple that with, you know, like high intellect and just a general obsession with certain hobbies. Anyway. It's not that I didn't have emotions, though. You know, I was able to laugh and cry. I was able to get angry, too. You know, I didn't know how to control my temper then, and I'd often get into these, like, big arguments at home, like, even over trivial things. I'd often be told that I talk down to people, that I don't even let them talk, you know, that I try to dominate in conversations. Multiple people said so. I was otherwise neutral, and, you know, everyone's to me, it still felt like everyone was me. It's a really weird concept that we're going to get into later in the book. I just told myself then that, you know, I would not be trans if the thought had even occurred to me in the first place. It was never even logical, though. You know, it's just a general feeling I had, you know, plus just all the general triggers. It was the only thing that made sense, and it's still the only thing that makes sense now. You know, when you know, you know, you know. It's just like being in love, but in this case, it was all pain. It was a foggy existential pain. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I had no control, you know. I wasn't interested in philosophizing my life. I just went there that weekend to escape, you know. I didn't want to be at home. I considered not going at all to Libra Planet. I only kept my schedule and went there because the other trans people that I knew, they'd be there. So there were several trans people that I knew at that point. I just wanted to go somewhere that I thought, where I thought I'd be safe, you know, isolated. But even while I was there, you know, fighting to overcome repression was really hard. I later went to with my first friends, the one who asked how I was doing, to another friend's place, and I got really high on weed. I didn't know how much was too much, like it being my first time, so I smoked almost an entire joint while completely drunk. I felt a kind of non-existence that I can barely describe now. What I do know is that I hated it. She had to mildly hypnotize me so that I wouldn't even fall asleep, depending on, especially on the long train ride back to her house, so that the numerous police officers we passed would not arrest me for public intoxication. Yeah, we were two good friends chatting on a train. All I remember is that feeling not only like I had a pair of tits, but that they were literally on fire, and everyone around me had my face, including my friend. Weird is weird. My friend also told me that this was the first time she'd seen me smile. You know, I came alive while high, all buzzed. I knew this as well, but, you know, they were only my feelings. Once again, I only saw myself. Like, weed made it more obvious, but it was then that I knew everyone is me. They all sound like me in my head. I hear their words, but all I saw was me. Bit weird, but just before the weed, but while completely wasted on the alcohol, which... with which my friend had so graciously plied me, I told her that I no longer cared who I was or about Libra Boots. I was really drunk and I was fixating on the FSF's receptionist, the woman, who sat drinking with her boyfriend. I compared my life to hers on a purely socioeconomic basis to my friend, explaining how she inspired me because I only... My friend interrupted me. She smiled, completing my sentence. You want to be her? Yes, I said, almost sobbing. She sensed that I'd had enough at that point, and she didn't want me getting, you know, too out of control. So she took me to grab my luggage and from another friend's house where I'd slept the previous night. I got high on the weed that same night while we were on our way there. When we got there, I was so fucked up that I was no longer responded verbally. Like, I just smiled. I was off in my own little world. I had the key to enter the place because they'd given it to me earlier, because they trusted me with it and they thought they might not be there later when I needed my stuff back. They just happened to be there, and they could see how fucked up I was. Like, they all laughed, I'm told, saying my name repeatedly. I don't even remember giving them the keys, I remember giving them the keys, actually, but I don't remember anything else. Like, my neutral fog, as it was, is, but the weed made it more pronounced. I felt like I was now truly a robot, albeit one that could not reliably answer his or her own name. Weed is wonderful. And then we went to her house. They're all nice to me, and, you know, I knew I was in safe hands, but this action was also, like, reckless, like getting drunk and high at the same time, for the first time, in a foreign country, while my mind was also in that state, might not have been the wisest course of action. I didn't even weigh the risks, not even, like, articulating in my mind, for example, the fact that if I was abandoned in that state, I would have been defenseless on the streets, on what was a violent suburb. You know, my friend lived in a really rough area. I was in that apartment and everyone around me was smoking weed, so I just decided to try it. You know, they didn't even know I was new to it. I confidently took the joint and they just thought I knew what I was doing. I had deja vu the next day when I was sober, passing McDonald's that I was sure I'd never been to. Yeah, my friend was a vegan and I'd apparently horrified her by smashing a Big Mac into my face while stoned. She told me that she ate my chips though. I mean, fair enough. I laughed it off, as did she. I'd apparently enjoyed myself, but I couldn't remember any of it. I didn't even seem dysfunctional to anyone else. Like, my friend guided me the entire time. I don't remember even arriving at the train station to her house. I do remember pulling out my blue bank card at the time to swipe it through the ticket machine. My friend had been guiding me like a puppet the whole night. You know, it's like I was her perfectly stoned robot. we were late to Libra Planet the next day, arriving about 11 o'clock or so. I'd missed my Libra route talk, but the FSF sysadmins and one of my disciples had performed it for me. There, several people had wondered whether I'd been like captured by the CIA or something, especially as I like wasn't signing my emails. Truth is, I just didn't have my GPG keys with me on the burner laptop, which I'd used at the time. You know, I mean, it's not like I'm going to bring, you know, my main laptop through US customs, right? I was once again in, you know, my normal, now sober fog, and I actually felt relaxed, albeit depressed, because I was in guy mode. I joked to my friend afterwards, highlighting both the literal and spiritual truth in the statement. Deadname wasn't there, and he never would be. Leah killed Deadname. The wife of my other friend from the night before, whose keys I returned, approached me in the speaker's lounge at the conference. She was smiling giddily at me while handing me a bottle of shampoo that I'd left, and I must have left an impression. I'd smoked with her two nights before in guy mode. She knew me by my dead name. I was staying at a house, in a home, and the husband summoned me inside. The husband summoned her inside, because we were just chatting outside, smoking on the porch at 2 a.m. And this apparently made him uncomfortable. Yes, if your wife is outside smoking with a man at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going to be a little bit uncomfortable. Anyway, I found this mildly amusing at the time, articulating it this way exactly in my mind, thinking that he thought that we weren't doing anything. She was just a nice woman. You know, I went down on my own at first, like, because I couldn't sleep, and she followed me down, and she asked me for one, and I said, yeah, all right, fine. You know, she was really nice, and I was just calm the whole time. You know, we're just chatting. I spend the next week or two in my stoner friend's apartment, mostly at my laptop or watching TV with her, or her partner who was also there. They were all polyamorous. My main friend, the other one, like, she wasn't there. They sheltered me, and you know, they offered me friendship. Their friends would often visit as well, including one tranny, a so-called tranny chaser, who one of them was also having sex with on the side. I met him on my first night there while I was still stoned. At the time, I thought the place looked similar. It felt similar to the sort of unkempt appearance of some living quarters as depicted in The Matrix, when characters are shown who live in the city of Zion. A fitting comparison, given what I knew of the Wachowski sisters and the fact that the film was actually about trans people by way of allegory. I sat in my calm, stoned little fog for a fortnight. Yeah, this was young suburbia, real kids of America, and I thought, and I spent it completely fried on weed the whole time, eating cheap American corn cereal and watching reruns of Red Dwarf with my hosts. I would occasionally share my cigarettes with them as well. My time in her apartment was just extremely depressing. Like, all I did was smoke weed and eat food, although she was happy to have me. I spent that period writing an even more arsenine journal than this book that I ended up chucking. Pure stoner crap, but in a young, you know, 24-year-old way. Absolute rubbish. I wrote about aliens, for example. They did show me how to apply makeup and so on. I did wear feminine clothing, in fact, inside their flat, but I never outside. I slipped on a coat and some jeans. I went home after about 2 weeks, since orders were backing up, and I needed to, you know, actually be an adult at some point. I had real responsibilities needed my attention, you know, as I remained in my fog. Lovely people, though. I went back to the FSF office on the last day, whose staff were, like, really surprised that I was even still there. They didn't even know what was going on at that point. You know, I wasn't actually out as trans to them, except one. During one of the nights, the night that I'd become drunk and stoned, I actually blurted out how proud I was for being Leah to the FSF's licensing and compliance manager at that time. I was shouting really gleefully, just really drunk, and I told him that I was Leah. He smiled, apparently not knowing how to handle me, and as my friend just sighed heavily. On a different night, I and several of my FSF colleagues, plus this and another friend, we just went out for pizza, right? We crashed out in the home of one of the staffers who was hosting people for the night. Yeah, a lot of people who lived there in Boston at the time, you know, they just let people use their rooms during the weekend because, like, it was just the general camaraderie of that place, and I still felt alone. My fog filled the room that night. I spent time with the numerous trans people as many of them were at that conference. The conference generally welcomed us. I'd relay my stories to them, you know, walking through the streets of Boston as we sat in different venues. This was not my country, though, so I switched instantly to mine and unlocked my front door. I'm in England now. I've just teleported to my home country. I became quite drunk on my grandmother's whiskey and immediately came out as transgender to my mother, crying over the phone. Whoops. my parents' reaction was mixed because my dad was undergoing cancer treatment at the time. I felt like they didn't care about me. I didn't even visit him in hospital. The thought never even crossed my mind, except in passing. I just couldn't be bothered. You know, I needed my own place and I had no hatred for my dad. I didn't want him to die or anything, you know, but I didn't think about it. You know, I was still in my own calm little fog now, which now filled with an ever increasing rage as I wanted to become Ilya. I wanted to become me for the first time. I felt that if I stayed in that house any longer, that Leah would die. You know, it would have been all too easy to fall back into the closet as so many did. No. At that time, I misinterpreted the fact that they were prioritizing my dad's cancer to mean that they did not support my transition. And I grew to resent them for months. I went on to ghost my mum for months. I didn't even return her phone calls. An angry fog enveloped me, bloody with a calm, soothing rage as I emerged in April. I'm living alone in a cheap, rented bungalow. I was rich, so I didn't cook. I just ate out. I was also depressed, so I didn't unpack for months, and I didn't even have a bed. I was drunk daily, often waking up in vomit around broken glass, sometimes cycling at 2 o'clock in the morning in my pyjamas. I was pissed daily and in every sense of the word. The first night I got my keys, I slept there overnight without even a bed. I curled myself up on the sofa left over by the landlord, and I used a nearby rug for warmth. I'd purchased a bottle of red wine and downed the lot, reasoning that I wanted to feel emotions that night. Spewed it all back out the next morning. I woke up with a bad headache and I'd walked for about 1 hour to McDonald's for a big breakfast. It was calm, you know, my town peaceful as always. I ate my breakfast like it was another day, just, you know, without a care in the world. I went back to my parents' house that morning and my mum was really angry with me that I'd not come home. This confused me and I went back to my room immediately, ignoring her. I knew I'd be leaving soon again anyway. She'd been there the previous night, shining a torch through the window to see if I was there, but I didn't respond. You know, I didn't, like, intellectually even consider that she'd be worried. I just wanted to be alone that night. You know, this was about 2 weeks before I actually moved. The bungalow was nice, and it only cost £800 a month. It had a plain entrance hall, reasonably sized living room, complete with furniture, plus a rug. The landlord already, like, left me a bed frame, so all I needed was a mattress. The master bedroom was quite large as well, fit for two. I had a walk-in shower and a very old-fashioned bathroom and a mirror that I'd smashed on my first drunken night there. The kitchen was long and narrow with many cupboards and an electric stove that never works right. It sometimes even caught fire when it got too hot. I just had to make sure to run it at a lower heat. The oven didn't work, but I fried, steamed, and microwaved or simply ordered my meals. The kitchen was old-school limestone and tiles, as was the bathroom. Hardwood wooden floors and white walls everywhere. In other words, a standard low-cost rental. The wiring was absolute shit, actually dangerous as some of it wasn't even properly earthed. I sometimes had to reset the breaker, which happened a lot, like when a light blew, for example. Really shit wiring. The gas was old-fashioned too. I remember being drunk when I noticed the leak, and the gas man did not know what to do when I was laughing maniacally on the floor for some reason, but he did shut off the gas. Workmen came that same week to disconnect the old gas pipe and route new ones, installing a combinational boiler instead. I showered cold for a week, and it was the middle of winter. I liked the garage, which was connected to the side of the house. I never used it, really, that much, but I did like it. It was my laundry room. I also had running water. It had running water for some reason as well. I don't know why. The front garden was paved stone with a small tree, and the back garden was all brick. No glass. Easy maintenance. Mine was one of two bungalows on a private road. The neighbours were a senile old elderly couple. I enjoyed my company, although I didn't ever enter the house. I never invited them into mine either, although I did occasionally borrow items from them, just odd little bits. Simple smile and a hello would suffice, and they'd always smile back. Their son, an electrician, would sometimes visit, and, you know, I'd talk to him as well. Boring people, very boring. Nice place. It was a detached bungalow as well, so I could make a lot of noise. The streets were very quiet at night, and the bungalow also had really good insulation, so it was dead quiet. Like even during the daytime, like during the summer with the windows open, it was like just really quiet. A visitor once commented that it was like living in a rural cottage. I enjoyed the quiet too, but sometimes that meant I could like hear a creak at night. Very distracting, especially when you're alone in a dead silence trying to sleep. Saw my little brother about a month after I moved. Yes, my little brother. In the same cafe as me while I ate. He said that I should visit my dad in hospital. How dare my brother question me, I thought. He wouldn't even call me Leah. Fuck him. It's not that my parents didn't care or anything, you know, that they're actually supportive today, but back then they had my dad to worry about. I interpreted this then as having been abandoned, left to rot in my own misery. I mean, I was just really angry all the time. I enjoyed my new adult freedom, but home felt empty, you know? It's like my fog, as it were, still would not leave, and I felt exactly the same as I'd done before, except now I was free to experience it, undisturbed. I lived inside my own mind, and I just lived in my head for months, like, except IRC chat rooms. I did a voice chat server at some point, and I invited some people from LibreRoot to it for a while. I enjoy music sometimes, but I normally prefer silence. Alternatively, I would watch videos of 8-bit computer games, like on a certain console made by a highly litigious corporation from Japan. I enjoyed the monotonous nature of the music in these games, and sometimes played them myself. It soothed my neutral brain and helped me to focus on my work. I still do it to this day. Enter bad friend. Names, because that's what she was, a bad friend. She, herself trans, ran a support chat online for vulnerable trans people. I wasn't ready to come out as trans myself, at least not publicly, and another friend at the time recommended this chat room to me. We both knew the lady. She was quite charming, generally, in a countercultural, scrappy sort of way. She was the sort of person who would always insert herself into the line of fire to protect someone that she cared about. And, you know, she was always highly chaotic in the room, full of energy. Yet she could also be quite rational at the same time. She was really outspoken at all times, and she never accepted any nonsense either. She had no problem telling you when you'd messed up. She was the sort of person who'd spend time mentoring everyone around her as well, like she was some kind of mother figure. She was also high a lot, nearly all the time, like she just smokes weed all the time. I was an absolute nutter in the chat room myself. I was drunk all the time. I lost count of the angry rants I'd wake up to. I once dreamed that I was chatting on IRC, and then I actually woke up for real with an IRC window open, and I was frantically scrolling to see what I said. Bad friend was also a professional colleague of mine outside of the chat room, and she'd refused to tell me she was the same person. I only found out that bad friend was the same lady I knew outside by pure accident. She only admitted it to me after I confronted her, which meant that she was quite happy to have control over me, as what I'd believed then were two separate people. She could often be duplicitous like that. I looked up to her, though, at the time, and I was talking to, like, one woman who worked for, an employer, and another woman who ran the chat room, and both women were the same women, same person, but they tried to make it, she tried to make it seem like I was talking to two different people. What the fuck? Anyway, I looked up to her at the time, and, you know, she actually felt the need. I felt the need to prove myself. You know, I should have just broken off contact, but I was weak back then. She was a moderator in the chat room. I felt like she was trying to make me detransition, because she constantly expressed doubt that I was even trans. Or when she finally became somewhat convinced, she told me that I'd have to be patient and live as Leah without hormones, without treatment. You know, just wait. This, to me, felt like asking for death, and I expressed righteous indignation. I was enraged and drunk daily. I lost count of all the angry rants I went on, as I said, waking up sometimes in my own shit, and I just shower it off, you know. I drink some more, go out and do whatever. I was a mess, and all they could do was watch me die. I hated bad friend because she already had everything, and she was lecturing me about how I needed to be patient and wait. I already waited 24 years, I said. I wanted to be Leah now, you know. This was more than hate. Her words were an attack on my right to exist, as though her words were themselves a knife. I looked up to her at the time, and I felt I needed to prove myself, you know. I hated myself for it later, that I'd allowed her to hack my mind like that. I felt violated in every way. I was eventually shown by someone else in that chat room how to buy hormones on the internet after I'd expressed several times the desire to kill myself, and I researched how to dose it. Like, at one point, one of the people in that chat room literally just told me, "Do you have a death wish?" And I said, "Yes." I describe with such drama these harrowing ordeals, but most of my time was quiet. You know, it was boring, it was empty, it was though like the air itself was dull. My mind then was more of a fog than when I thought myself a man. You know, the booze just made me angry mostly, but it was mostly the same fog. I could still type accurately at 150 words per minute while drunk as well, so they suffered my wrath daily. I couldn't see that back then how I'd ever become, you know, Leah, become myself. I drew on a wall once, on one of my walls, a picture of a beautiful woman with a note that read, "If you kill yourself, you're never going to get to be this woman." You know, there was a fish and chip shop that near me that I regularly ate in because of a waitress who works there. I didn't know her, you know, but I did enjoy being served food there. I had a full restaurant. There was a full restaurant inside where you could also order regular meals. And I admired her body in ways that I did now understand. The restaurant and the town, though, were dull. The world, to me back then, was dull. And this woman's body spoke to me in ways that no others could. A bit weird, but, you know. I don't think most people would have any concepts of how lonely I felt throughout this period. It was more than loneliness. I felt alien in my own home. I just wanted to end it all, you know. Other people still felt like robots, and I felt, now sober and on hormones, like I was the only person alive. Yeah, it had become June. I stopped drinking for a while. I took estradiol instead, excitedly, in fact. Throughout this time, my drunkenness had been shielded from Libreboot. I even kept working on Libreboot throughout. I've started to feel strongly the effects of the emotional and bodily effects of hormone replacement therapy. I was more aware of my feelings and I felt more relaxed. I was still foggy, but I could laugh and cry for the first time. For the first time in years, in fact. I felt my own emotions clearly, but it still felt like everyone else was a robot, you know? I also cried randomly for no reason. I came home shopping one day and I randomly fell to the floor in tears. I cried every day sometimes. I'd often in my room while my brother was working on laptops for me, because he was working for me at that time. All those years suppressing my feelings and, you know, now I was a sopping mess. It was fucking awesome. You know, I could feel. I also laughed a lot more and I was suddenly aware. I was just like suddenly fully aware, not only of my own thoughts, but my entire world. I started to notice more details and everything, like I could see the world in high definition. I experienced a general sense of calm over time and a reduced sense of anxiety as well. This was freedom, as I experienced it then. I still had the same sort of neutral disposition as before, and this would continue, but I did feel more extremes of emotions for myself for the first time. Perhaps it might have been to do with stress, since I was suddenly fixing a major source of stress in my life. The overwhelming enormity of what little I'd now achieved simply dawned on me, but while I contemplated what came after that, I'm still quite sure, I'm quite sure other people might have done something similar. I felt amazing though, you know, my crying was due to actual sadness, a general pervasive sadness that I still can't place intellectually now, but I just felt sad, you know. At the time, I felt amazing about it. It may seem strange to some to say that sad feels amazing. Before then, I was really sad. Not like this. This was intense. I laughed a lot more at jokes as well. I just learned to deal with it, you know, as I worked on my actual problems. This period of constant crying only lasted for a short while. Even after it had abated, I found that I was just more aware of myself in general. It's really hard to explain, but it's just like I just sort of felt like my head was lighter, that it was heavy before. I actually felt calm. My little brother told me that I seemed more outgoing as well at this point. You know, I just started meeting people offline. I'd suffered then from what I later found to be anxiety, and I did take antidepressants for a while, which also worked. There were the other half, HRT being the first. I mean, I later stopped taking the antidepressants. You know, my medical history is not really relevant for this book, but no, I mean, it's like when I'm in a room, I could feel myself in the room. I could feel my body and place myself in the room. I didn't feel anymore like I was constantly inside my own head, even when I was. I don't think I found enlightenment as such, but I probably came close. I digress though. Hormones are amazing. You know, I angrily and proudly sent Bad Friend a photo of my hormones, just if I was okay. I was more than okay, no thanks to her, and I made my contempt quite clear. My mum took me out one day, all dressed up, to a clinic appointment. I felt really amazing that day. I was also really nervous, and I went back to guy mode afterwards. Despite being on hormones, I didn't feel like I had the confidence back then to be Leah in full dress. Because like my logic back then was, you know, I feminize on hormones a little bit and then gradually start, you know, dressing up. One of my other trans friends visited from the chat room, from abroad. She strong-armed me after I'd finished crying that day, one day, because she, dressed me up and, you know, dolled me up and everything. She got me to go out as Leah, as myself, for the first time. I realized that I didn't need to worry anymore. You know, no one, because I was like paranoid back then. I realized when we went out that day that no one would attack me. We just had a nice day out. My friend was still a robot to me, but it was being friendly. You know, we went to the pictures. We ate ice cream at the beach. A druggie family offered me heroin at the beach, which I'd obviously declined. I felt no offense, but I did still follow them around and report them to the police, describing them in detail. It just seems like the correct response. I also came out publicly online. No one cared. A few people even said congratulations. I could just live my life in peace and no one would bother me, which was exactly what I wanted. FOSDEM and several news sites, also the Free Software Foundation, changed my name on articles, not articles that had already been published. FOSDEM agreed in advance that I would be accepted to do another talk in 2017 as Leah, if only I'd applied later that year. The FSF agreed similarly for LibrePlanet 2017, although my 2016 talk wasn't recorded anyway, and they deleted my 2015 talk at my behest. They simply changed my name. I became much more confident during her stay, when my friend stayed with me, even becoming more productive in my work. She gave me back the kick that I needed to become once again self-sufficient, as I'd previously been quite depressed. She helped, first by showing that I had nothing to fear, and second, by inspiring her own struggles again through her own. Inspiring my struggles through her. I didn't need to ask, because she was generally just chatty and she constantly told me everything about herself. I learned to model myself on her to the extent that I would then become who I wanted to be. We went everywhere together, as though we were dating. She'd visited my country for reasons that were still unclear to me, although, you know, I showed her a good time. I was no longer the gentleman, but it was still the right thing to do. You know, it was kind of like I was her ambassador to the UK, I thought. I enjoyed the confidence that I'd quickly gained going out dressed as Leah for the first time. I rode my bicycle around town once, and for some absolutely stupid reason, like, I heard a group of men, like drunk, there was standing outside a pub as I rode past, and they sang, "I want to ride my bicycle." Yeah, you know the song. The exact same thing happened when I rode past a group of teenagers. Weird. They must just all really like that one song from the 1980s that everyone's heard. I played it myself on repeat when I got home, obviously amused by the irony of it. Yes, I did want to ride my bicycle, and thank you very much. That's how I shopped. I also found a weird fetish group at this time, not marketed as a trans group, but as a cross-dresser group, although did also have trans people there. A lot of regular male cross-dressers, though, as well, who were not trans, but they did it just for, you know, like fetish reasons or as drag queens or whatever. It was a disco hall, and I'd get completely smashed there while I was there. They all felt like robots. Blank, like me. My drunken stupor made me lament once more about all of the tasks laid ahead for my transition, which genuinely overwhelmed me. I drank some more, making all of these strange people extremely upset. One of them even said to call the police at one point. I ended up crying on the floor, shouting and swearing as they carried me, kicking and screaming. They pushed me onto the street, telling me that I should never return, as I screamed at one of them that I wanted to slit her throat. My only thought then was that I'd left my coat inside, which my mum had lent me. I had to lie to my mum the next day that I'd lost her coat. The coat was theirs now. Pity. I was completely shit-faced, staggering home to my foreign friends, not remembering who she even was, because, I say again, I was completely drunk. I pushed her out of my bed, because I was sleeping on the sofa and she had my bed, you know. she slept on the sofa instead that night, and she had a right go at me the next day. You know, I laughed. I also vomited in the kitchen while she showered. You know, that morning, I cleaned it up quickly. She knew anyway, because, like, my kitchen smelled like bleach afterwards. Oh, well. She made her usual blueberries and milk, because apparently that's breakfast. I made tinned tuna with some toast, and I ignored her for the entire day, because I had loads of work that day. She came with me to see my mum once, like, and she relayed to her all of the same stories that she told to me. Only this time she broke down in tears, apparently overwhelmed as she had a lot of personal problems herself. I sat in perfect silence as my mum hugged her, reassuring her that everything would be okay. And my mum was reassuring her. I observed the room. I could never show such affection myself automatically. I wasn't even capable of feeling it, and I knew I was incapable. I regarded it then, in that moment, as a burden, because I just didn't know how to respond. My mum, though, was there to comfort her. You know, the fact that my mum provided such comfort relieved me, as it meant that I would not have to deal with it myself. I literally thought so in those terms, while watching her cry. I mean, you know, whatever. She got bored, and I sent her back to the airport in a taxi that I'd paid, about a week or two later. We never spoke again after that, which seemed, like, really strange to me at the time, but I just continued my life. You know, she was my lovely German girl for a week, and then she was gone. I did cry after she left, because I thought I needed her. I thought I needed her, you know, to help me be me. I'd been in guy mode just before she came, and I thought I didn't have the strength to go out as Leah after, on my own after that. But you know, because I'd always gone places with her. I vowed not to regress, and I found then I was now self-sufficient in this regard. Never spoke to her again. I didn't even think about her, and you know, we just stopped chatting online at that point. GNU Libre Boot was booming. You know, throughout that year 2016, Libre Boot development never stopped. I even worked on it like during many of those nights in which I was drunk. Libre Boot chat room never saw my drunkenness because I'd expressed what I was thinking in the trans chat room. You know, the Libre Boot chat room, they got my code instead. I was having sex with different booter calls every night from July, often drunk. there was this one guy, twice my age, that into cross-dressing as a fetish thing, and he had a cuckold agreement with his disabled wife. He was my favourite, although I never did get to meet the lovely lady. Yeah, he was about 50, and I was 24 at the time. On the first night, we'd eaten a pizza. Like both he and the room just felt cold to me, and until like we're about to leave, we decided that at that point that the meeting was a mistake. But we hugged goodbye, and I kissed him. He proceeded to guide me softly as we started merging into my sofa, my erect penis touching his. I also learned how to do anal sex that night. I visited him once. I went to see him once while he was at his work during daytime, which embarrassed him a lot. I'd gone there on a whim. Since I was on my way home from shopping anyway, and I was just really bored. I approached him calmly and said hello. Like he was in like, you know, guy mode. He told me to never ever do that again, and he eventually broke it off with me because I'd been like drunk one or too many times anyway. There's also this one bloke from the Ministry of Defence, technician. He said he'd like done like tours in Afghanistan. He's really nervous and in his 20s, I'd say. All he did was like jack me off. It was really challenging for him though, because I was on estradiol at that point and quite flaccid. But he persevered. He let her cook dinner for me, like just some tuna pasta dish. He taught me how to measure pasta quantities using coffee mugs, but I never saw him again. I went to several gay bars trying to find sexual partners. I had not romance or anything, just sex, right? I went to a number of bars and I'd normally get just drunk instead. I didn't like quite feel the room so much this night, as I was there for one thing only. Like, you know, I was there at a gay bar. It was just a peaceful night, and I generally enjoyed the music. There was a lesbian couple next to me. They quietly left after I'd gone on at them about something, you know, whatever interested me while I drank my gin and tonic. I was just really pissed. So they sensed something in me, or maybe they were just bored. You know, all of them were like strangers, and I was just sitting with them, right? There was one person who tried to seduce me all night before deciding like not to come home with me, which really annoyed me because I was really horny. I just called a taxi. Now, my taxi arrived. I asked the driver to wait, and I went back inside to hug him. I smiled, and I broke his nose. I just punched him and broke his nose. Smiling, calmly, I saw a blur, and that's all I saw as his face fell backwards as I calmly and quickly walked out of the bar, my whim now satisfied. His friend called me a dirty tranny, as I quickly entered the cab unscathed. I did it on a whim, feeling no hatred or malice in me whatsoever. You know, I felt extreme satisfaction as the driver took me home and I worked on Libreboot all night. I felt a general sense of entitlement over those who did make it to my bed. I would often invite people to visit me and sleep with me. It was purely sexual, and none of my flings lasted for more than a week, usually no more than a single night. I'd been banned from the trans chat room because I'd told a disabled lady in there to get a job. Wasn't even angry, but she had some problems, and I believed I'd be helping her in saying so. You know, the admin, bad friends, took a side and banned me. I was sober the whole time, taking only my estradiol. I did sometimes drink, but I was sober that day. I now felt like there was, like, no one left to humour me. I just felt alone. I felt like I still needed the group at that point. It was the only support group I had, and, you know, she had previously tried to make me detransition, or so I thought. This was the last straw. You know, she learned on that night what it's like to anger me, because it's really difficult to anger me that much, but she learned. Months prior, I'd made like two suicide attempts, first by trying to jump off a building. I mean, I didn't jump, but I got to the top floor. That counts, right? Another time, I was riding my bike into traffic on a foggy day, actually foggy. I've seen what dying is like because I've witnessed my last second of life. I'm the product of quantum probability, and that car did swerve for me. Another version of me has the exact same memory as me and is dead in a different universe. To me, this was personal. You know, like this was personal, right? Bad Friends never wanted me to become Leah. She wanted me to stay as Dead Name forever. And because that person was controllable. She didn't like that someone so close to her in her world was potentially becoming as unstable as I, yes, indeed, ended up becoming that year. We had some professional relations outside of the chat, and she was probably uncomfortable with me at that point. To me, though, this was personal. I rarely hold grudges, but I wanted her dead. I had achieved freedom for the first time in my life, freedom over my own mind. To me, her designs upon me were one of death. She preferred a world where I did not exist. I felt then that Bad Friend was a threat to my life, so she needed to go. Both suicide attempts were around the same time, and she was telling me like at the same time that I shouldn't get hormones, that I needed to wait. I was on the verge of death mentally. Like, it sounds insane now, but I really did think like back then, like, she wanted me dead. Like, I was quite insane. Her parent friends and others later told me several facts about her, as had Bad Friend herself. She was smoking weed heavily, which can induce psychosis under stress conditions. Over the coming months, she faced a series of life stresses that caused her to suffer a nervous breakdown. I would often talk to her boss on occasion. We were friends, you see. I was friends with her and all of her colleagues, and they all knew that I'd been close friends with her at some points. We did not speak of the new rift much, not in public anyway. Bad Friend wanted to remain professional and keep her job. She basically sank to such an emotional level that she got herself sacked from her job. And I made no effort to stop this from happening. I watched. I was happy to see her burn. I would tell myself, likely a delusion, yes, but I told myself anyway, that her bad relationship with me may have contributed to it, that she may have become angry because of me. I'd generally been a pain in the ass in her chat room before she banned me, and we had several hostile exchanges after that. I do not think it was mere coincidence that she was sacked at the same time, but what can I say? Of course, I didn't quite think about it or express it so eloquently back then. I was an angry drunk, improvising the whole time. I was still figuring people out. I literally do not remember most of it. I'm making sense now for this book of what I did, and because I'd blacked out for like a lot of it. I was pretty much unaware of almost all of what happened. I mean, I watched her again. I was enjoying every minute of it. Whether I will do the same now is uncertain, but I had a lot less regard for my own well-being in those days, and I would resort to reckless behaviour. She did it to herself, I thought, but I did not make her life easy. No. I drank endlessly, and now my drunkenness had reached the Libreboot ILC channel. I had beef with the FSF and GNU projects as well, on separate technical matters. I'd become increasingly unhappy with the technical direction they wished to impose on the project, and I just did not respect their authority. My experience with Bad Friends merely served as a catalyst for what was to come next, in a moment of pure madness that I still do not understand today. All I know is what happened, but not why I did it, but I know how I felt. I know how I felt back then. Bad Friend wasn't enough. I found afterwards that it did not make me feel better. It didn't make me feel worse. In fact, I felt calm. I felt no different at all. I wanted to take it out on someone else. I was just really angry to everyone. None of it made sense. I just hated for seemingly no reason. I was drunk all the time and just burning everything around me. I was drunk every night. I wouldn't even remember anything the next day, and I just get into fights all the time online at this point. The Libreboot left GNU on my own drunken whim, announcing thus, and I completely alienated the FSF. I announced unilaterally that I would remove Libreboot from the GNU project. This, after Libreboot had begun heavy integration with GNU. It was a core part of their messaging, and they regularly touted it as one of their own. Several of the people had joined the project themselves at that point, assisting in its development. I just stated openly, I started making up a bunch of shit about them and how they'd done this and that. One person resigned from the FSF. I didn't care whether any of it was true at the time. I enjoyed all the chaos. It gave me a rush when I did it, like when you drive a car really fast. I had no reason to do it. It served no purpose, and it benefited no one. Definitely not me. It was one of the most reckless things I ever did, and it could have destroyed my life, especially at a financial level. I was drunk, and I liked the thrill of it. I remember doing it, wine bottle in hand. I was emotionally neutral, but I felt adrenaline. One of my friends pleaded with me not to do it, just before I did. There, I felt a bliss as I destroyed the world. several people stopped talking to me. I just pissed off everyone around me. So what? I thought, you know, I'd just replace all of my former friends, who were then regarded as enemies. Then I drank some more, and I passed out. I went to my gender clinic after waking up, completely hungover, regular appointment. I just lived my life, you know. I'd attacked my friends, apparently, and seemingly for no reason, destroying myself. I just remember feeling liberated that day. I was walking through London like I was free from the FSF, and I did exactly as I pleased. I was free from bad friend as well. You know, I was insane, but I was calm. I was free to be me, free to be alone again. I could do whatever I wanted, and no one around me could tell me any differently. I burned the world around me, and now I was free. I wasn't, like, euphoric or anything. I thought nothing about it the next day. I just got on with my life, while multiple people had to deal with the mess that I'd apparently created. That I did not even appreciate intellectually. One of my now former friends told me at that point, "You don't seem to realize just how much damage you've caused." Come now, I thought. Libreboot is free and open source software, and I'm still in charge of it, but nothing will change. You can do whatever you want with the code. You know, you don't need me. I bragged about it to my gender therapist. I did tell her that I was hungover, which she found amusing too. My therapist said nothing. She just smiled, mostly, probably unsure how to deal with the lunatic sitting in front of her. I was proud anyway. I walked home through London that day, calm, as I knew I was now the woman in the blue dress. I simply did not care about anything else. I had removed them all, and I did cry once or twice when I became overwhelmed, knowing that I might now lose my business and my home. And I was just worried about my future. But this was short-lived when business seemed fine. My life actually just went on as usual, and I sighed in relief. What I'd done was reckless, but literally nothing came of it, and I just didn't think of it. Several people started spamming the Libreboot chat room, including some really unsavory characters from a certain far-right web forum. They had a thread about me, which I found amusing. I paid it no mind at the time, as they seemed to be just mostly bored, and I didn't think they'd pose any physical threat to me. Several of the people I'd left in charge of the chat room dealt with their spam while I laughed. I loved how creative they were with ASCII art, just spamming it in such a way as to render colourful text, calling me all sorts of wonderful things. I went to visit my mum. I found the post about me on their forum so amusing that I just kept looking at it. It's a special kind of forum that targets vulnerable people. They identify emotionally weak people and try to isolate them, goading them into suicide. I knew what they were doing. Most people would be disgusted by what they do. I know what they do is wrong, and I oppose it on principled grounds, but without any attached emotion. The reason they do it is because they're bored, and a lot of them probably don't even care. They find it funny, and I find it mostly uninspired. There are much more productive things that you can do with your time. They were trying to do that with me, but it didn't work. They misinterpreted my need for stimulation as loneliness and isolation. I actually mildly enjoyed their attacks. I felt a warm rush. Not happy as in proud, but I liked all of the controversy in general. I knew at an intellectual level that they did want me dead, but they seemed to be mostly bored teenagers or young adult neets, not in education, employment or training. So I paid them no mind. The one who posted the thread about me was later banned from said forum, and they doxed him too. I used the information in his thread, to send him a written letter, thanking him for the amusement, although it was worded as something like, "I forgive you." I said on that forum that there were a lot of people who seemed to feel a similar boredom to mine. Like everything around them was just bland and dull, and I understood instantly why they did such extreme things. I was never pulled into that crowd myself, though, because I had discipline and standards, and I'm trans anyway. You know, it's not like a bunch of fascists will accept me. I understand them, but that doesn't mean I have to become them. There are far less destructive and arguably more productive ways to get your kicks. I will explain precisely what I understood about them. Most of them were poor, uneducated people, or otherwise disenfranchised in some corner of the world. Mostly the United States, but there were others in there. They'd all been duped, all roped in together since it was essentially a cult. They get you when you're young and become your friends. These people had no other outlets, at least that's how a lot of them probably felt. And they were all of a particular neutral mindset that enabled them to be, well, forced them actually to be bored at all times, like me. This is not to say that all of them were like that, but a lot of them seemed to be like that from what I could tell. They wanted something, anything, that would get them going. Just saying outrageous things on the internet and attacking people gave these teenagers the jolt they needed, it seemed. Once again, most of the people on that forum seemed to be teenagers or young adults, young adolescent males. Hate and rage, more generally, are quite potent for boredom, but something that I myself had grown out of many years ago by that point. Like I said, I understand them. I saw in myself that I could have easily become them, if only I had taken made slightly different decisions earlier in my life. Other non-fascist forums also posted about me. I was everyone's enemy. I dreamed once when I was in school, when I was younger, about the possibility that I may one day become infamous. I'd watched the villains in some cartoons made by a highly litigious animation company, and I just thought they were all cool. Now I was the villain. This sounds somewhat cringe in the book, but I stand by it. I enjoyed being the object of their fury. I was the pits that they dumped all of their anger into, but I just lived my life. From my perspective, nothing really changed. I continued working on all of my projects, and I kept running my business. In fact, the controversy had led to a surge in sales. I actually made more money. The barriers had been left open, and now the whole world could see my madness. It was plastered, as much as I was, all over the internet. I laughed when I woke up, noticing that I had notifications in hundreds of IRC channels, and just as many private messages. I ignored all of them. I felt like I had done when I was a child, when I used to start fights on the school playground and I'd walk away and watch. News websites did not cover Libreboot for a while. Too hot, too dangerous. I was already in another trans chat room at that point, which I had quickly crashed out of as well. The irony is that they were unhappy with what were then my very liberal attitudes about the world. I was also drunk there too, angry and rude to everyone at all times. I lost my lady, the Dutch friends that I'd lost my virginity to. I told her in the one from 2015. I told her, the Dutch friend, in an argument while I was drunk, while she was complaining that I should stop drinking. I told her that I thought her boyfriend may be cheating on her. Sensing my drunken ruse, she said that I'm fucking manipulative and broke off all contact. Now, this mildly annoyed me. This, alongside the trust issues caused by the facts that I had apparently just destroyed the life of her other friend, called Bad Friend, allegedly. Fuck them both, I thought. I did troll both of them for a while with various sock puppet accounts that I sent into their chat room. Do not misunderstand me. Once the chaos died down, things became calm again, and I went back to my fog. I simply felt nothing about it, and I did not think about it. I did end up with an overwhelming sense that my future was now quite uncertain, and I generally felt lost. It was the same feeling I had before the chaos. In other words, I could have avoided all of the above, and I may have felt exactly the same in the end. I can't know for sure, but patterns emerging from my future as I lived it would continue to demonstrate this as a plausible outcome in retrospect. This is to say, I did not necessarily experience regret. I just simply did not experience anything at all. My life did not change. A lot of people stopped talking to me, and I'd become somewhat of a pariah in my own community. A lot of people likely felt alienated during this period. I also had my own life to deal with. Everything just continued. Someone at the time who I'd known told me that I didn't even seem to know what was going on. I did know. I just didn't care. I started drinking much more heavily. Once the chaos calmed down, I just felt bored. Life was boring. You know, I still visited my parents, but there was hardly anything special about that. I wasn't in the spotlight anymore, and my life just felt ordinary again. Ordinary means boring. This began a period of overall stagnation for the Libreboot project, where no releases would occur for several years. A lot of development still occurred, and I'll have more to say about that in the next chapters, but I lost all focus for years. I also fell out with one of my brothers at the time. I won't go into detail because it doesn't really matter, but years of hostility with him had led to a climax one night, and suffice it to say, I have not spoken to him since 2016 as I write this in 2026. No contact at all for a decade. What exactly was I supposed to do? I just kept living, you know? What other choice was there? Two months passed, and I woke up in a strange hostel. Somewhere in the continental European Union. Weather's nice and nothing works. Totally backwards country, very poor. Most of the roads aren't even roads, and the world still burned at home. Yeah, I was meeting someone who I just met that week. Barely knew her. She was living with her transphobic parents at the time and on the verge of suicide. Just like my Dutch friend, it seemed. A mirror, perhaps, and I wanted a partner. It was boring at home. I met her in a trans chat room for survivors of abuse. We loped. I met her in a country that weekend. We stayed in a cheap hostel. I met her friends. We went to various cities and we enjoyed ourselves. She was happy that someone like me, especially of my stature, as I told her about Libreboot, wanted to help her. I offered to take her back home with me to the UK that very same week. I got to know her personality very quickly. She was highly sensitive to the world's problems, extremely left-wing, and quite friendly to everyone around her when she wasn't depressed. She was extremely sensitive to other people's feelings, yes, highly empathetic, you could say. She was the sort of person who would absorb the feelings of the room, carried away by everyone else. She was the sort of person who would often defer because she hated conflicts and wanted to avoid it at all cost. She was generally attentive to everyone around her, and her friends seemed to like her. She'd known them since she was a child, very loyal sort of person, who she just needed the right help. She otherwise loved her country, but, you know, there was nothing for her there. She was the sort of person who wanted, the sort of person who wanted to fight. So her plan was to flee instead. Transcare in her country was a mental hospital. They would give you everything you needed except what you needed. No one cared about her. She just wanted to leave as soon as possible, knowing that her country would likely drive her to madness. We stayed in a hostel because her mum was so hostile to us that she would not even let me into her house. She also later said that something seemed off about me, the mum, similar to what the mother of Dutch friend had said before. She was observing the same thing. I was my usual dopey self all night. Polite, yeah, but I was quiet and somewhat aloof. This was the sort of place, this country was the sort of place that you'd go to on holiday, and indeed her country was hot, despite it being November. Everything was also quite cheap. I spent a week or two very much enjoying the fine food and sunny weather with my new sex partner. She was highly intelligent, and I enjoyed conversing with her about a great many things. I really can't articulate just how gay we were, while everything at home for me had burned all around me. I did tell her about what had happened to me in my life, and she was quite shocked. She said that I had fucked up. Her words, not mine. I paid it no mind and changed the subject. It was she to argue, I thought, and I didn't want to talk about my professional life anyway. We fell asleep one night with our vibrator running, and we'd accidentally left the door unlocked, like to our room, but it was closed, but locked. Unlocked, rather. When we woke up, we discovered clear evidence that someone had entered our room since the door had been left slightly open. We reasoned at that point that it must have been the cleaning lady. We both laughed, imagining just how much that poor lady saw. Scenes like this continued for weeks, and we were even banned once from an establishment because we were both in a toilet cubicle counting to 100. She was counting in her native language and I was counting in Dutch. We were both giggling, and that's all we did, but someone complained, like they thought we were having sex in there, so we got kicked out of the place. It was just pure homophobic discrimination. A group of teenagers came into our hostel each night. They knew the combination for the building, and they'd sit in the communal kitchen playing checkers as they smoked weed and I listened to music. They listened to music. Girlfriend and I, we really enjoyed watching them. We just ate our cereal late at night, and all these teenagers would just break into the place. It was a really calm night, and we listened to their music. I did wonder if they were going to share their weed with us, but they obviously never did. They never left a trace. Like they put everything back when they were done. They quietly left around 1 o'clock, and they left the place immaculate. They generally amused me, and they're just really nice. They're always stoned and really quiet. They whispered quietly amongst themselves, barely noticing that we were even there at all. The hostel was run down, really run down, even by her country's standards. It was 40 euros a night. I paid 40 euros a night, though. You know, it was mostly empty as well. This was not a busy tourist season, so there was only one other customer there, a large family, and they were also nice. I enjoyed speaking with the grandmother of that family. She spoke perfect English, and she also had a really nice dog called Luna. Yeah, my girlfriend, you know, we went everywhere together. We did everything, saw everything. I thoroughly enjoyed her backwards country. I learned to appreciate its beauty that somehow seems missing back home. Nothing worked, but, you know, this was a heaven of sorts. It did seem to have some nice landmarks. It was, I suppose, my second America. all of her friends loved me as well. You know, most days though, we were by ourselves loitering. You know, we just enjoyed ourselves. We visited all the best spots. You know, we were just being gay the whole time. One night we were going to, we were in our car going to meet some friends. Like we were going to eat dinner. I briefly saw a car number plate and our music stopped as I heard a mild crunch. Glass in front of me, previously transparent, was now a wall as I enjoyed a peaceful silence. People came to see us as the smoke enveloped us. I was at peace, serene. I stared at girlfriend and I screamed mildly. I knew instinctively that this was the right thing to do. I left the vehicle shortly thereafter and took pics, loitering mostly. At one point I even laughed. Girlfriend followed shortly, curling into a ball and entering what was clearly a panic attack as I informed her that it would be okay. The most logical response. I became annoyed that we'd no longer get to eat with her friends. Equally annoying was the fact that she would not act. I then wondered how we would get back to the hostel. Emergency services arrived and I quickly grabbed our bags lest they be confiscated. We had business the next day and fetching them from the depot would cause a delay. I remained calm. I felt it strange then how relaxed I was, but I paid it no mind. Relaxed is good. Multiple other vehicles passed us, mostly lorries, as I observed. I was hyper-aware of the entire environment. There was a bush behind me next to a haphazard brick wall, a river below it. There were roughly 5 houses to my right, plus a few other parked cars. We had hit one of them, but there were no casualties or injuries. To my left was a roundabout that we had just crossed, taking the second exit. The bricks on the pavement were old and cracked. The road we'd been on, mostly gravel. On the other side of the road was a petrol station, then closed for the night. I saw roughly 10 streetlights dotted around, and it was indeed nighttime. Our car had veered slightly off and hitting the rear left corner of a parked vehicle at a roughly 20-degree angle, and the wheels were locked wheels of our car were locked left at a roughly 30-degree angle. This indicated that girlfriend had attempted to swerve left, but it was too late. Her driver's seat was on the left and we were in the right-hand lane. The damage to our vehicle was minimal, as we'd only been going roughly 50 kilometers per hour. The front right of our car had a large dent at impact, roughly 30 centimeters inward. Nothing to write home about, and the car was probably serviceable, but she'd been planning to live in the UK anyway. Her mother dealt with the car. It was an average-sized black car, typical family car. The one we smashed into was smaller and silver. There were roughly 10 onlookers from the nearby house to my right. I called out, asking if one of them could call 112. I was really annoyed, but also just generally calm and happy, you know, but none of them spoke English. So I was like, oh, what do we do now? They called the ambulance anyway, like, because, you know, it was common sense. The ambulance was as you'd expect. The two paramedics also tended to us and both wore dark green uniforms, both of them roughly 30 years old. Girlfriend and I went in the same ambulance and she interpreted in English for me. The hospital entrance had a dark brown wooden reception desk and glass front panel. It looked to be a fairly old design, roughly 1960s, and I suffered multiple tests in this beige-coloured building. Nearly all of the walls were beige with grey floors. Everything looked old. The hospital generally seemed efficient, and my girlfriend's got her medical reports. Mine seemed delayed. It finally reached 10 p.m, and the hospital seemed mostly empty, making me doubt that we would ever be called. Girlfriend and I simply left. We suspected discrimination when I did not receive my medical report at the hospital, as I was visibly trans. It became late, as I said, 10 p.m, and her friends were parked outside. They took us back to our hostel. I enjoyed conversing with them about Libreboot in the car, as girlfriend had already told them about it. The night felt still, and it was fine, you know, I mean, none of us were damaged, and girlfriend had calmed down. Girlfriend would later tell me how freaked out she was, as she perceived my general calmness that night. She told me that I did not seem to express anything emotionally whatsoever. My calm, detailed description previously is exactly how I experienced that scene. I simply absorbed my surroundings and stood there and did what I had to do. Days earlier, she told me about a plan to end it all in our car while we were travelling roughly 120 kilometres per hour on a motorway. England seemed like the safer option, I thought. I simply snapped my fingers, and we appeared instantaneously in my living room, like in a 1990s sci-fi, yes, that one, because girlfriend had a phobia of flying. Ryanair was out of the question. My mother left a note wishing her luck. Oh, that was nice. Then we took the bus into town, setting her up with a GP, bank, and we continued our holiday immediately. We went to a local in-person trans group that we found, since I reasoned that she needed to replace all of her friends, now thousands of miles away. We did befriend several local trans people from the group, all of them nice, drinking tea in a small diner where we met monthly. There was also wine, which made me very happy. My dad lived, by the way. He laughed at an episode of Rick and Morty, the one with the drunk homeless man who has a theme park inside him. Dad had a hole inside him where his cancer had been. My girlfriend laughed too. I quickly realized that girlfriend's mental problems were too much for me to handle. I didn't know how to handle them. I was annoyed with her when she wanted attention because she distracted me from my work and my life in general. All I wanted was a reasonable human being to spend time with at my house. I'd invited what then felt like an unwelcome stranger into my home. I kept thinking about the crash, so I watched videos of them. I remembered my neutral feeling back then, and so I watched videos of people's throats slashed, people lit on fire, people falling from great heights, people being shot in the head, and so on. The internet is full of such videos. I'd become curious again because of my neutral response during the crash. I found that the videos themselves didn't bother me, and I found that really strange. Not joy, not sorrow, not pain, not fear, nothing. More specifically, whatever mood I'm currently in remains as I watch, flat. I feel no change to my emotional state, but I could simultaneously watch, for example, a funny episode of Family Guy and laugh at that while death is playing on my screen. I mean, Peter Griffin's lack of self-awareness is hilarious. A more serious example in modern times, I am an anti-fascist and I'm anti-genocide out of principle, opposing, for example, Israel's ethnic cleansing and genocide in Palestine. Yet I can watch videos of entire cities in rubble with pictures of starving, amputated children and feel nothing. I'll still do what little I can to resist such atrocity because I want to live in a peaceful world. Anyway, girlfriend, going back to 2016 now, girlfriend was in the shower and I pretended to be a suicidal teenage trans girl whose father was raping her. The chat room loved her until I, as Leah Rowe, arrived and spammed her back into the closet. They were all horrified. Girlfriend came out of the shower and I ordered pizza. I'd previously helped a 16-year-old woman in that channel emancipate herself from her religious extremist parents and get herself trans medical care. This and the previously mentioned instance elicited the same emotional response, nothing. Flat. It was part of my testing, and it needed to be done on real humans were I to know reliably what might happen. I've performed hundreds of similar tests with the exact same result every time over decades. The year ended watching her play computer games while I ate instant noodles. Specifically, she was in pyjamas playing Metal Gear Solid 5. I was sitting on the other side of the room, to her right, watching her behind at a roughly 45-degree angle. I was eating from a chicken and mushroom-flavoured pot noodle cup. She was specifically playing the campaign in Metal Gear Solid 5, where Solid Snake infiltrates a Soviet base in Afghanistan. She was sniping in-game. One of my old school friends clicked like on my Facebook post where I literally posted that I'm celebrating New Year's Day by eating a pot noodle and watching my girlfriend play computer games. I also played it myself shortly after. Bad friend, this time, did tell me at one point that and something that was true and that my anger would destroy me one day. Anger was how I dealt with anxiety back then. It's how I dealt with problems. Anger is a powerful way to motivate oneself in the face of adversity, but it's a double-edged sword. It can also make you depressed, which can be destructive. I knew this then, after the GNU incident. I write with such drama in this chapter to reflect how I felt then, but I quickly learned after that period that this was absolutely true. My anger hurt me. My girlfriend was the first attempt to fix it, but I was emulating what someone else might do. You know, to me, I just wanted a girlfriend. I basically just imported her into my life immediately after we met, and at one point I even contemplated marriage. The problem then, and for the next while, was trying to emulate other people. I would often envy the things that other people had that I wanted, becoming angry and wanting it myself, and I would just strive in my own way. But the anger itself had become a default response for everything. It would take me a while to realize this, as I didn't know it then. Anger was the main way that I controlled myself and others. When I felt like I did not have control over myself, the fear of loss drove much of this. All of my experiences with other people then was based on how I compared my life to theirs, on a superficial level at least. I'd often just absorb other people as I sat in a room. You could say I experienced the lives of others. Girlfriend was my first study. I write like this now in retrospect, but I convinced myself then that the relationship was actually real. I have to wonder if she herself knew what she was getting into. It quickly became a disaster for both of us.